We're going to continue our learning with the fundamentals of faith today. And I just wanted to do a quick recap of what we did last week and then just jump straight into it. What we did last week is we focused on where the principles of faith actually come from, where the Rambam codifies them, where he must have actually got them from. We talked about how the Rambam got them as a reflection from the indicators in the Mishnah of people who are off or out of the pale, and the Rambam sort of codifies what you have to do to be in from that. We discussed a little bit last week as to why the Rambam codified it here, why the Torah doesn't seem to emphasize it beforehand as being the system of the Gemara, the Mishnah doesn't seem to focus on these principles. It's only the Rambam. And we talked about the emphasis and the education. How do you want to educate your people? And finally, we spent a little bit of time discussing what happens if you don't believe them. What happens if you decide that, you know, for you, you know, the prophets, that isn't something which resonates with you. The fact that God is corporeal, you know, he's got a body, that isn't something, you know, you don't, all these things, you disagree on one or two points. So what happens then? So the Rambam says in no uncertain terms is that, you know, thanks Joe, but you're not part of the team. Right? You know, so the Rambam says that you don't believe in one of these, you're out of the system. And we saw that people disagree. The Sefer HaKarim says that no, that's not. It doesn't have that same gravity. It's not that heavy. But nonetheless, we ended off last week with talking about Rabbi Elchanan, who quotes the Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, who says that a person who even accidentally doesn't have the right system of belief is going to be, also loses their share in the world to come, which is a huge statement. Because speaking, if you just read the Pew report. That means to say we can own statistics according to that. Then how many people are essentially not part of the system then, if that's to be true, which is very worrying and disturbing. So we addressed that a little bit last week, but we didn't really give it full time. One other thing to consider is the following. Is let's say you have a person who is keeping a Torah system of values, and they're doing mitzvahs, and they're performing all the necessary injunctions of Judaism, but they're doing it because it happens to be, you know, they came to it themselves. You know, it happens to be that most consumers who buy kosher don't buy it for religious reasons. Do you know that? I think 62% of people who buy kosher say they do it for health reasons. Right? So what happens if you happen to be a person who eats kosher because, not because God told you, but because it happens to be, you know, that there's a more healthy system of checking the factories, there's likely to be less added ingredients that you don't know about, right? So what happens if you do that? So do you get, is there a value to happen to be approximating the Torah system just because you came to it yourself? You don't work on Sabbath because you take off weekends. Whatever else it is, you live that kind of life. So does that help? Does that work? So David J. Bleich, who wrote a book actually on the 13 principles of faith, we're going to come to it just at the end of today's share. He says that, you know, in the end of the day, that doesn't make the cut. If you're doing it because you're serving either your own system, your health system, whatever else it is, but you're not doing it because you're trying to serve God, then in the end of the day, to a certain degree, you're missing the boat. And that's what the Rambam is saying. Is how do you know you're actually doing it for the right reasons if you're serving God? But how do you know what God is? How do you know what His system is? Yeah, I'll tell you how it is. There's 13 ways to know you're doing the right thing. Number one is there's a God. Number two is that He knows what you're doing. Number three, so meaning what the Rambam is simply saying is, I'm telling you how to simply know that you're doing what you're doing for the right reasons. That's all the Rambam is saying. If you don't have that, then you're doing whatever you're doing because that's wonderful and you came to it for whatever reasons, but you're not doing it for the right reason. That's perhaps what Rav Lach says in the understanding of the Rambam. Nonetheless, in fact, many of the poskim, and most famously the Chazon Ish, talks about this, where he talks about what is called a category called Tinok Shenishba, which is obviously very famously discussed, and that is that the Gemara talks about a child who was captured by non-Jews and brought up in that society. And in such a society, the fact that child has certain problems in their belief system or in their practice system is as a function of their bringing up. So it happens to be the Chazon Ish does a very unique thing, and he applies that category to the question that he was asked, in fact, was in Israel. You see, the issue was that as Israel was a fledgling state, what was happening is the people who are in charge of everything, including electricity and water and everything else, all those systems was controlled by Jews. Right? So meaning the people who are operating those factories and operating the waterworks are Jews, but they are not Shomer Shabbos, right? The water carries on flowing on Shabbos in Israel. So how can you switch on the faucet? How can you ever benefit? How can you even just leave the electricity on for Shabbos when you know that the people operating those, the people who are maintaining the factories, they're maintaining the power plants, are Jews on Shabbos? That was the question that he was asked already in the 1940s. And therefore he made a very interesting application, and he said, you could say that there's a Tinok Shenishba, you could say that a person who grew up without knowing better, and already that maybe their parents or grandparents already threw off the yoke really intentionally, and that the Chazonish is not addressing, but they themselves, unfortunately, they're at a point in time where they don't necessarily have the control of their education. So this may actually, in fact, supersede what this Rebbe Elchanan is saying over here in this particular incident, which is just something obviously we resonate with, because you know a vast majority of Jews today simply don't have the necessary prerequisites to be able to know or not know what is actually going on or what's not true or not true. Be it as it may, this is a very fascinating debate as to what about the accidental person who doesn't believe, the accidental non-believer. Very, very serious and very timely topic, unfortunately. What we have in front of us for today, this is just recap. What we have in front of us today is the following. Is the Rambam comes along and revolutionary. He comes along and says, these are the 13 tenets of belief. Believe them in, believe them, don't believe them out. So the question is did history agree with him? Meaning, was the Rambam wholeheartedly accepted, or were there people who disagreed? Now that's a self-answering question, because in general, Rambam had a lot of books burnt. You know, meaning forget even the Yud Gimel Ikarim. The Rambam's Mor Nevuchim was burnt, but also what else was the Rambam was burnt? His halachic work in fact was burnt as well, as a function of his first section, Sefer Amada. Right. So it happens to be that the Rambam in general was never gained full and universal acceptance. For many years afterwards. In fact, as we're going to come up to Tisha B'Av in 3 weeks' time, it's interesting to know that one of the kinos is about the Shali Srufa Ba'esh. I think it's kinah 40, 41. And in that kinah, we talk about how there are 24 cartloads of books, which is a lot of books, especially in the days when you don't have a printing press and everything was handwritten. So in Paris, there was 24 cartloads of books which were burnt, and Rav Meir of Rottenburg, one of the great leaders of the time, wrote a kinah about that. Happens to be that Rabbeinu Yonah is quoted as saying, one of his Talmidim is quoted as saying, that the reason why he feels that those books were burnt was because very, very proximate to that, just beforehand, in fact, the Jews themselves had burnt in the streets of Paris the books of the Rambam. And so he felt that in fact this was a punishment for that incident itself. The book burnings based on the Rambam. Now, it wasn't the Yud Gimel Ikarim. The Yud Gimel Ikarim were not burnt. But nonetheless, they also didn't have necessarily the same, we'll call it warm welcome, all the way through history. So let's examine a few of the people who disagree with the Rambam himself, and then try to come back and say, well, in the end of the day, so bottom line, what do we do? Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. The Rambam, although he doesn't say actually articulate that Yud Gimel Ikarim in his halachic work, he does mention a few of them. This is where he actually paskins. We saw this last week, but let's just revise this for a moment in source one. This is where the Rambam actually talks about this Mishnah in Sanhedrin. He explains it in the following way. And he says, Chamisha, in source one, Chamisha haim nikra in minim. There are five people who are called a min. Ha'oimer she'ein sham alaka ve'ein lo'olamanik. A person says there's no God. Nobody's ruling the world, right? The watchmaker left the system and he went to have lunch. But if a person says that, or you say, you know what? There is a leader, but he has a few helpers or partners, right? Maybe two. A person who says that there is a God, but however, he is of form. He says there is a master, but he is not alone and not the only creator. Or a person who serves any deity or any power in the world, כדי להיות מלץ בינו ובין ריבון העולמים, כל אחד וחמישה אין אלו הוא מין. And a person who has a particular power that he has in conversations with to be between him and God, that is, he is considered a min. We saw that the ravid, min, it's actually hard to translate exactly. So because the min, what the rabbi is saying, heretic is, yeah, the general way we use it, but then it's very similar to the word we use for apikoros, which is also, you know, a heretic. You know, so English doesn't serve us so well here. So actually the definition of the word is better understood through the Rambam's codifying it over here. What you could do, if you wanted to be very careful, is you could take a look at the Rambam's definition of apikoros and his categories there, and min, and then try to get a common denominator between the two of them and get a sense of where the mistakes happened in either. But the word itself doesn't help us so well in terms of heresy, because, you know, unfortunately today, and this is why we have to learn this very well, is today, you know, the word heretic is thrown around quite freely. It's not so clear. That's why we have to appreciate really who really is a heretic or not. So the Ravid says, the Rav Avram Avbeistin says the following. He says, "Va'omer sheyesham ribon echad elo shuguf ba'al tumuna amar Avram ve'lama kara lazeh." Min v'kama gedolim v'tovim imenu chol chubazeh hamachshav lefi mashiro b'mikros v'yosem mashiro b'divrei agoros. So he says that why is the Rambam calling a person who thinks that God has a body? You know, there's a famous story in the beginning of the book Element by Sir Ken Robinson. He has a story about, he's talking about creativity, and he talks about a little girl who's in art class, and she's in, you know, 5 year old, and the teacher notices that every time she comes past her, she covers up her drawing. And so at a certain point, the teacher is very curious and says, you know, "Susie, what are you drawing?" She says, "I'm drawing a picture of God." So the teacher says, "But Susie, everybody knows that you don't know what God looks like." So she says, "Well, in a few minutes they will." So the Ravid says is that if you were to read the Torah and look at the Torah talks about Hashem coming and going and angered and has a hand and an outstretched arm and all these kind of things, you could come to that conclusion, and many people did. So how can you possibly call a person a heretic? How can you call that person out of the pale, says the Ravid. So already we see over here an interesting thing is that maybe the Rambam has exceptions. Maybe the Rambam isn't true across the board. Do you think, just as we're reading this Ravid, do you think this is unique to this particular principle, the fact that God is corporeal or not? What do you think? Just from what the Ravid says over here. Meaning, is the Ravid attacking, in general, the fact that the Rambam, all the principles of the Rambam says that you've gone too far by disbelieving it? Or is he only attacking this specific one over here? What would you think? Why? What was that, Michael? You think this one? Why? Why? Okay, so you're saying why the specific one? But let's further the logic. Why in this case is the Ravid saying that a person is not considered a heretic? Because what led into this conclusion?
The Torah
itself, right? Meaning to say, in this particular incident, if you read the Torah, you could come to the wrong conclusion because the Torah simply says it that way. It talks about God in these terms.
So if you read it literally,
He's not disagreeing with the Rambam.
He's not disagreeing with the Rambam principle.
He's disagreeing with the
apple of versus the min.
Correct.
Because the Torah seems to lead you to that conclusion.
Correct. So meaning to say, he's arguing with how are you dubbing this person? Are you dubbing this person a min or not? And what seems to be logical over here is that it's only about this person, not about the rest of them, because there's a reason why you could get to the wrong conclusion, right? The Ravid might say, by other cases, let's say the fact that God exists, right? The Ravid's not going to say, well, you can't call that person a min, right? Because there's nothing to support such a thesis. Dr. Cohen?
No, just saying, you essentially are saying if you read the Torah, it's a rational conclusion. So you
right.
have somebody who is following your halakha, following your Torah, and he says there are the midolim, so how are you able to take...
Correct.
You're disagreeing...
Correct. So
but a principle that where people who midolim will disagree with you, so by definition, it's not universally accepted.
Correct. So what that means to say is that the argument is local. That's just the point I wanted to point out, is that it seems to be a very local argument on this particular number 1 of 13, as opposed to saying this is perhaps the grounds for a full disagreement. So just need to be careful as to how much is being attacked over here. As you notice, by the way, yeah?
The Rambam, I think, would say over here that the interpretation of the Torah is fundamental. So that, for instance, let's say you have something, ayin tachat ayin, right? We all understand that that means mono. So it's the understanding of the Torah. So he would say that, you know, you take an anthropomorphism and you take it literally, you're out of the pale also, because you're not interpreting it the way it is accepted to be interpreted.
Interesting. So what you're saying, Elliot, is that actually the only way of understanding it is to be understood through the prism of understanding that there's no such thing as real anthropomorphism or anthropopathism, and therefore misunderstanding that itself is already the problem. Right, so that's what the Rambam is saying. Absolutely, absolutely. But the Rambam's point in countering that is that without that tradition, there were people who made that mistake, who were Chachmei Yisrael. So
misread the Torah. That's improper reading. That's the Christian reading of the Torah.
Okay, absolutely. Okay,
in a perspective.
But it happens to be that the point the Rambam is saying is that history has shown that there have been people who made that mistake, and we can't now retrospectively say, well, they're out. Right? The rabbi doesn't identify who they are, but he says, Gedolim Tovim Mimenu, right? Meaning to say, he feels that they're even, you know, they're people the Rambam should not get into the ring with. Right? So you're right. I think that's what the Rambam would say. But the rabbi's counter is that history has showed us. Otherwise, you can't now sort of exclude them. We're going to see a number of those kind of type of arguments as we get a little further on, with Mashiach as well. But let's just realize that, of course, we know that the Ravid himself, just take a look at Source 2, the Ravid himself does believe that God, in fact, is not of form. This is Rav Isidore Twersky in his biography of the Ravid. He says, there's not a shadow of doubt that the Ravid was personally committed to the traditional Jewish view, which maintained the unlikeliness of and incorporeality of God as an indispensable corollary of the existence of the and unity of God. Those Talmudic legends and homilies which nurture the corporeal misconception of God are, in his opinion, corrupting right opinion and religious matters. Elsewhere in his writings, Ravid is emphatic and unequivocal concerning the elimination of all anthropomorphic attributes with regard to God. It is not correct to speak in this manner about the Creator. So this is coming back to Dr. Huberfeld's point, is that the Ravid himself clearly agrees with the Rambam. He just disagrees with the application of min to such a person. Okay, so just to be clear about this. We're going to get to this. I want to get to this Rav Hirsch actually a little later. When we come to this actual, maybe we'll spend a little more time focusing on the actual min. When we get to this Ikar itself, we'll give a little more time to this Rav Hirsch, which is very, very fascinating. But be it as it may, this is perhaps one of the earlier sources where we see already a disagreement with the Rambam. I mean, the question we have to say is a general local, and it seems to be very localized on this particular issue because of the mistakes that certain people reached.
Doesn't the Rambam himself and Shimon HaPorachim start saying it's like a children first, as a child, as they grow up, you teach them that they do, there is some kind of a corporeal ability, but as they get more intelligent and they get wider, they use it as a tool for children to grow up until finally they understand.
In Shimon HaPorachim, the Rambam talks about incentive. That's what he says. Meaning, he says we shouldn't be doing Torah for a reward, but you can still start by educating children to do things for reward. And so you give them chocolates and you give them all kinds of things, and then you build them up, and then you give them money, and then you talk about world to come and things like that. But at the end of the day, what's really about incentivization. He doesn't say that about the Rambam. Never says that about body. Okay, because that for the Rambam is a very dangerous part of the faith system. So this is the starting point. This is where we already see dissent. You know, they joke and they say, how do you know that that Hashem created the world? It's because the Rambam said it and the Ravid didn't argue. Right? It's like one of these jokes. Because the Ravid argues on everything, right? So if you want to keep the Rambam in check, the first place you go to is the Ravid. But let's go a little further into history. Happens to be that, in fact, that all the way through history, there were people who disagreed. So the first place to look is, in fact, into the Sefer of Or Hashem by Rav Chastai Kreskes. When I first heard of Chastai Kreskes, I thought there was a group of people called Chastai Kreskes. But it happens to be Chastai Kreskes was a rabbi in Barcelona, and he was born in Barcelona in Spain. He later became the Rav of Aragon and Saragossa. And he was a student of Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran. The Ran is usually found at the back of the Gemara. It's on the Rif, is the commentary along the side. So he is one of the later medieval commentators living in the 14th century. And it happens to be he was a major philosopher. In fact, they say, if I'm not mistaken, they say that... they say that Spinoza, in fact, originally was inspired by the teachings of Rav Crescas. He obviously went off the pale. He was a formidable philosopher, and he has a book called Or Hashem, the Light of God, and in it he says the following. Hamaimer Hasheni, he says the following, and this is regarding principles of faith. But he comes to a different conclusion to that of the Rambam. He says the following: I want to talk to you about the foundations upon which the house of God is built upon. And if you're able to understand the foundations, you can understand the building which is resting upon them. If you're to remove one of the foundation stones, then the entire building would collapse. Okay, so he feels that these are them. This is really where it starts. What are them? When I looked at the Torah, I found that there were 6 foundation stones, as opposed to the 13 of the Rambam. Rav Chasdai Kreska says there's 6. What are they? Ha'echad yediyas Hashem, knowing God, benim tzoros, that among existence. Ha'beiz hashkach asai, his vahem, Hashem, knowledge of the world. Gimel yecholto, his ability. Ha'dalad nevua, the fourth is the fact that he has prophecy, he communicates with humankind. Hey is, the fifth one is bechira, free will. And finally is vav is atachlis, is the point of existence, or the are ultimately reward and punishment of the within this creation. So he has 6 principles. Now, if you want to just, it's very hard to read the words here, but he comes to them and he shows you philosophically how he reaches them. This is very fascinating. He says, "V'zeh l'mashe ha'yosa Torah po'al retzoini me'a mitzvah." That this is what the Torah wants when it gives humankind a commandment. "Asher hu ha'po'al el ha'mitzvah." "Asher hu ha'mispo'el." That God is the one who is the actor who commands the mitzvah, and we are the mispael, we're the person who commanded. It means to say, if there's such a relationship, right? We know, when we open the Torah tells us, keep Shabbos. That means to say that we are recipients of a command. So that relationship itself demands the following. It demands that the person commanding knows, right? He knows and wants and is able, right? Because if he commanded and he wasn't serious about it and he walked away, then why would he be commanding? It must be he knows what you're doing, he's able to give repercussions on what you're doing, and he's willing, right? If such a relationship exists, and from the same communication, you're also able to know. And that means to say that if such a command exists, it must mean that the recipient is willing and can choose, and not being forced. Right? Then he goes on, V'liyos ha'poel, asher me'ha'poel, el ha'mispael, ein, himalit lonu mi'siach ha'sus, ma b'neihem, yichuyav shi'yam mi'siach ha'sus ve'advekus, ma b'neihem v'hu ha'nevua. And of course, because there is a relationship, there must be a continued relationship, which is through prophecy. So what he essentially does is, V'liyos kol poel tivi, oy melachti, v'kol sheken ritzoni umefual, I don't know what that particular verbase is over here. Hashleimus tachlis yadua ein hemlet v'poal hashalem azev liyosa letachlis choshuv v'lozed de'enoi lechalek mehamaymar leshisha klalim. And it must be, therefore, he says, that therefore there's a purpose of this whole relationship. Meaning, if I'm looking at this relationship and God's saying, you should be doing something, I know that God exists, God knows, and God is able. I know that you can think, you can choose. And there must be a relationship of communication between the two of you. And there's an outcome that if you do it, yeah, you're going to get a great reward. If you don't do it, you're going to get punished. So he says, just from that communication, I can derive 6 principles. And without them, the whole communication falls apart. But with them, it all makes sense. That's what he says. So you see what he's doing? He's starting from a very different point to the Rambam, right? He's not coming to the Mishnah in Sanhedrin and talking about people who believe in God or not. He's just saying, I'm looking at the basis of religion. Does it have to be Judaism? Not necessarily even. This is philosophically the fundamentals of any religion, says Rav Kreskes. So coming to it himself, he arrives at a very different perspective. It happens to be the Rambam approximates most of these, right? The Rambam talks about all these things, with the exception of, what does the Rambam exclude from these? Bechira, right? The Rambam doesn't include free will. Interestingly, why it doesn't. But it might be that he includes that in Schar V'Onesh. Not clear. But at the end of the day, it's interesting that Rav Kreskes comes to a different conclusion. Let's go a little further. Rav Shimon Duran, who was in fact the Tashbates or the Rashbates, also born in Barcelona, and in around the same time, in fact, as Rav Kreskes, he actually moved to Africa, became the Rav of Algiers, and also formidable in philosophy, astronomy, and mathematics. So he has a pirush on Maseches Avos called Magen Avos, very early pirush on Maseches Avos, and of course. We all begin Maseches Avos with the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, which is Kol Yisrael Yeshalayim Chelek L'Olam Haba. Shneim Avameh Kulam Tzadikim L'Olam Yerat. That's the way we start Pirkei Avos. So in his Pirshon Avos, he starts commenting on that. And what he does is he says something very interesting. He starts talking about how, and this is a section of it, of his introduction, but what he starts saying is the following, is that there's three categories of principles. And the first five of the Rambam can be slotted into my principle number one, belief in God. The next three can be slotted into the notion of Torah min HaShamayim. And the last two can be slotted into my last one, which is relationship. So what he starts doing is he starts looking at the Rambam, and he says the Rambam isn't maybe necessarily 13. Maybe the Rambam is essentially three, just compressed into categories. Now that's very interesting. Right, so is he disagreeing with the Rambam? Not clear. It's not clear if he's disagreeing with the Rambam. He has a few questions on the Rambam. But it seems more like what he's doing to the Rambam is he's streamlining what the Rambam had done. Right? The Rambam is a system, but I'll give you, we'll call it the structure of the system, says the Tashbates. Now, the person who was the greatest student of both of the Rav Kreskes and the Tashbates, who lived just a little after them, and his name was Rav Yosef Albo. Lived in 1380 to 1444, and also living in Christian Spain. He wrote a book. He was actually very involved in the disputation at Tortosa, and he wrote a book called Sefer HaIkarim, the Book of the Ikarim. We're more familiar with Rav Yosef Albo and Sefer HaIkarim. It's more well known. But it happens to be that he's built on the lap of both Rav Kreskes and the Rashbates, who are lesser known. He was a student of both of them. And he says the following. He disagrees with the Rambam. We saw before he disagrees with the gravity of the 13 principles, but he also disagrees within the number. And this is what he says in the very top of page 4. He says, "Aderech anochon shiyir e'li besiris ha'ikorim heim ha'sharoshim v'yasodis ha'torah elak yesu." This is the best way to count them, he says. The truth is, ki aikarim akolalim vaichrechim ladas alakis heim shloisha. There are only three: veimetzius Hashem, the existence of God; hashkochas eschal eschar v'ones, that Hashem is aware for schar and ones; and Torah min Hashemayim, and the fact that the Torah is from heaven. Ve'elu shloisha heim avos lekol aikarim asher ladas alakis. And these three are the primary. The primary three categories for anything else in religion, Komai Torah Sa'adam, Torah Sa'nav, Torah Sa'avram, Torah Sa'moshe, when you say Torah, it means to say it incorporates everything about that subject. V'zulazeh min ha-Torah ha-Elokis, im efsho shi'imtso yoyser me'achas bizman echod, oy bezu acharzu. V'tachas kol ikar me'elo sh'roshim si'ifim ha-mishtargim v'ha-mistafim min ha-ikarahi. And of course, every ikar is going to have now bullet points. There's going to be subcategories of each of these. Kitachas Metzios Hashem, who shoresh Yosef Kadmon v'Nitzchi v'Domehem. The fact that we believe in God means to say that we believe that He was the Creator of the world. The fact that He is eternal, that He's going to be, He was, will be, right? That He's alone, that there's nobody else, that we should pray to Him, right? All these things, which the Rambam will set up as separate categories, are in fact one. When we say that we believe in Torah, that means to say we believe in the prophets. We believe that Moshe's prophecy is unique. We believe that nothing's changed. Right? All those things the Rambam will say will be separate, unique things. He says, no, that's all incorporated into Torah and Hashemayim. What does he leave out, by the way? What couldn't fit into these categories, interestingly enough? What of the Rambam's 13 will not make the cut into the Sefer HaYikarim's general 3? Right, so Mashiach might be one of them and what else? Okay, interesting. Well, that might be part of that. I'm trying to remember if he actually attacks that point himself. But another part of it is Mashiach and also Tchias HaMesem. Right, Tchias, those two don't really sound like they're part of the system that he has it and he says it. What was that? It might be part of Scharva Onish, but I think he actually says himself that it doesn't have the same severity. What he does say at the end, though, is a very interesting thing. He says in the last paragraph, he says, "Va'amore al heyos gimal ekarim alalu shorish v'yosod de'emuna." So he says, I need to find something that I can pin this to. Because in the end of the day, the Rambam, what's the Rambam doing? The Rambam's reflecting on the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, and he's telling you that the reflection of that Mishnah and Sanhedrin, the people who are out, is my system. So where's he coming from? Sounds like he's just sitting down and thinking about things and thinking more about things, and he's coming up with a system. So where does he get it from? So he says the following. Listen to this. He says, Yisod ha'emuna asher bo yagia ha'odam el atzlach ha'samitis, hu mash yisto lanu ad sheknes ha'gdola b'tfilas musaf shel Rosh Hashanah, gimel brachos. He says, when you read the Tefillah of Musa for Rosh Hashanah, that there are three separate brachos. What are they? Shem Malchios, Zichronos Hashofros, Shem Keneged Gimel HaYikarim Alalu. Right, La'ir Leva Adam, Ki Ba'imonos HaYikarim Alalu, Hei Misiyifeyim, V'shor Hashem, Kifi Ma'ashiroi Yizke Adam Bidino Lifnei Hashem. That if a person believes on the highest holy day of the year, these three principles, Malchios, Zichronos Hashofros, which he feels are parallel to, here's the idea of the fact that there is God, the fact that there's Hashkacha, the fact that there is Torah Min HaShemayim, that is what he feels, therefore, is the basis of what Atchik and Nisag Jolah was doing on Rosh Hashanah. Notice, by the way, that Rosh Hashanah is the only davening in the year that has three in the middle. Generally, Hashanah Esrei is in the format of three at the beginning, three at the end, and a subsection in the middle. On a weekday, we have 13 in the middle. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, we have one in the middle. That's it, right? So there's seven in total on a regular Shabbos, a regular Yom Tov, and there's 19 on a regular day. Why Shmoneh Esrei? Yeah. Which one was the extra one? Not clear. Not so clear. There's a debate as to what was the extra, what was expanded. But Rosh Hashanah is the only time in the year where we actually have three in the middle. So Rav Albo says that the three in the middle are obviously very fundamental. How fundamental are they? They're the fundamentals of faith. That's what Rav Albo says. And by the way, this is just a snippet of a much, much longer... a much longer book. He has the Sefer HaYikarim is an entire book. He spends a lot of time on this. This, and you'll notice, by the way, that this is in this section quoted is. Let's just see where this is. This is in I think section 4, Sefer HaYikarim 1:4. Right. This is in Maamar Aleph, section Dalet. The previous three sections were attacking the Rambam. He spent a long time, actually, piece after piece, arguing on the Rambam for different reasons. Okay. And at this point in time, he says, "Well, this is what I believe. This is not what I just disbelieve. This is what I do believe." So, this is the Sefer HaYikarim most famously disagrees with the Rambam. At a certain point, he actually argues that the Rambam really meant what he said. meaning to say, the Rambam really was getting at what he really meant, but he's making it much simpler for us to have it into the categories of three. But he does disagree with the gravity of disbelieving. That he does say explicitly, as we saw last week. Now, this is, if you're looking at these particular arguments, what are these arguments doing to the Rambam? What's going on over here? Just to look at the system of what's happening. The Rambam says, you have all these very important principles. If you step over the line, you're out. Right? And what are all these people doing? What's the Tashbates? What's the Or Hashem? What's the Sefer HaKarim doing? They're minimizing what the Rambam is saying, essentially. They're saying to the Rambam, either you need less, like the Tashbates, or perhaps we can broaden the categories into bigger things, and therefore there's only three of them. But at the end of the day, what they're doing is they're saying you don't need as much as the Rambam said to be part of this, to be part of the party.
They're sliding them into their three. His 13, or most of them, are ending up.
Okay, right.
Three. So he's not arguing. The bottom line is the same. You're over this. Doesn't matter if you're over number 9 of the Rambam or number 1.
Yes or no? Yes or no? He at the same time, the Rambam didn't give us three. Right? Meaning, at the end of the day, the Rambam still felt that each of these are distinct and unique. But in the end of the day, also there are certain ones who are not going to fit into his rubric. So in the end of the day, what's happening is they're minimizing. What I want to do with, learn with you at this point in time now is the people who disagreed with the Rambam in the opposite direction. Right now, everybody's disagreeing with the Rambam up to this point in history and saying, the Rambam, you got too many, it's too much, so let's minimize it, or let's categorize it. But in the end of the day, they're simplifying the Rambam system. Now let's see the argument in the opposite direction. So it happens to be that the Abar Benel, besides for being the most prolific author on the Torah, he wrote many other sforim as well. He was unbelievable. Unbelievable. He wrote a sefer called Rosh Amanah. The Rosh Amanah is a 24-chapter book dedicated completely utterly to the Rambam, to the Rambam's 13 principles of faith. It is really quite remarkable. And what he does is the following. It's quite something to see. So the Rav Daniel Yitzchak Abar Benel, as we know, living a little later, he's living later than all of these people we've talked about up till now, says the following, and what I did is I put the table of contents of the Rosh Amanah, so you get a sense of what the book's about. Okay, so he starts off, this is on the right-hand column on source 7, HaPerek HaRishon. This is just, and Abar Benel in his clear, lucid way of describing things, that everything you know what's coming. So he has his introduction. Here's HaPerek HaRishon, Bezichron Das HaRav HaMaimoni B'Yisodei HaTorah V'Yikorah V'Yikoreah K'fi Ma Shehevi B'Hirish HaMishnah V'Sefer Minyan HaMitzvos HaSher Lo. So number one, he says, I'm going to lay out in chapter one, what are the 13 principles of faith? Chapter two, Perek HaSheni B'Deyos Shar HaChachomim Shebo'u Achro B'Inyan HaYikorim HaMitzvos HaSher Bohem Right, Kafi Ma Shezochar HaRav Chastai B'Sefer Or HaShem HaSher Lo V'Rav Yosef Alba B'Sefer HaYikorim. Now I'm going to give you the people who disagree. Chapter 2 is the people who disagree. What we've done up till now. HaPerek HaShlishi B'zichron Sheva Es Shvai Esrei Tzvekos She'ira Chachomim Mahem B'divreyem Alei Korim Asher Hevi Arava Maimoni. I'm going to now enumerate the 17 questions that they have on the Rambam. Then he continues. And the next barak is Esrim V'shloish Tzvekos, another 23 questions. Asher He'ir Harav Chastai Neged Harava Maimoni B'avur HaMitzvos Hashem Mona B'Ktsas HaYikorim. And now I have another 23 questions which Rav Chastai actually asks on the Rambam. And then HaPerek HaChamishi, B'shmonis Tzvekos Acherim, She'arti Ani. I have another 8 questions which I felt that they didn't actually address. Okay, so let me be absolutely clear, says Abba Benel. Any problem you have, I'm going to put it out over here. We're going to do the laundry publicly. We're going to make sure every dot is known. This is what the Abba Benel seeks to do. By the way, I didn't include this in the source sheets. I found this afterwards, but I was able to get hold of a very lucid table of in English of all these questions. So, just as an example. These are the 27 questions listed in the Abar Benel. You know, just as an example, the fifth of the Maimonides' principles that God ought to be worshipped is a particular commandment, and as such ought not to be counted as a principle. Meaning, the fact that you pray to Hashem is a mitzvah, not an ikar. That's one of the questions that's asked. Meaning, right, tefillah is a command. Another example, why would denying belief in resurrection cause the Torah to collapse? Which is essentially what Rav Albo is doing, right? There he's excluding Tchiyas HaMesim. Why did Maimonides fail to count as a principal belief creation? Right, so there's things he should have, there's things he shouldn't have. There's many, many examples of this. Why in the Sefer HaMadah did Maimonides call the first principle the foundations of all foundations, Yesod HaYesodos, right, in the pillar of all sciences, instead of calling it one of the foundations? Right, there are many, many questions the Rambam has on him. That's one of Abar Benel's questions. But in the end of the day, I'll try to send this out to Bnei Neder after Shir. If anybody's not on the mailing list, the email list, please let me know so I can include you. But the Abar Benel lays out very clearly all disagreements on the Rambam. And then, that's only up till chapter 5. And now he says, in Perek Sheshi, in the 6th chapter onwards, V'abakdoma harishona hanitzarech alea lebiur ha-drush hazeh le-ha-torah sasveko v'hi me'aroz shem ikar v'shem yisod. He says, first I want to define for you what an ikar means. Then he goes on to say, "Biur Akdam Ashniyah." I'm going to give you a second introduction in 7th chapter. "Maniach Chosah Gamkein LeBiur Adrush LeLisachtus Asveikos VeHi BeBiur Ikar Rishon VaMitzvah Rishon." I'm going to explain the first one, and he goes on. He spends 22 chapters explaining and defending the Rambam. Right? He is the knight in shining armor. He defends the Rambam against all these questions. His own, Rav Yosef Albo's, Rav Kreskes's, all of them. He defends the Rambam. And at this point in time, you know, you're at 22 chapters in. You think, okay, you've made the case. This is it. There's nothing else to be said. He's going to give the stamp of history. He's going to have the last word on the matter. And then he does an about turn. 180 degrees. Chapter 23, what happens is after fully defending the Rambam, the Abar Benel actually now attacks the Rambam. which is the most remarkable thing. In the last two chapters of Rosh Hashanah, the Abarbanel disagrees with the Rambam. Listen to his disagreement. I included this section actually in our notes. This is on the top of page 5. He says, V'chein kosav harav agadol. I like to tell you, read the Rambam's principles himself. B'perush ha-mishnah, b'zichron ha-ikar, and b'ikar ha-shmini. What is the eighth principle of faith according to the Rambam? He says, Shehu Torah min ha-shamayim. The Rambam believes that Torah is from heaven. Right? That's, you have to believe that. He says, Omrazal, v'ein hefresh bein b'neicham kushu mitzrayim, b'ein anochi ha-shem alokecha. And the Rambam makes explicit that it doesn't make a difference whether you disagree with the pasuk that the b'nei kush or mitzrayim, which is a pasuk in Parshas Noach, right? And meaning about the generations of a part of the family which is not really significant to Jewish history. Or you disbelieve in the first of the Aseret HaDibros. It doesn't make a difference. Right? Hakol mipi ha-gvura v'hakol toras Hashem tamima kedusha v'emes. It's like an electric circuit. You know, you could pull out the smallest diode, but at the end of the day, if the circuit isn't complete, it's not working. So the Rambam says that any letter, any even seemingly insignificant pasuk in the Torah, breaks the system. It's a circuit breaker. V'hine, hoyda b'fiv u'b'sfasav she'b'inyan ha'emunos u'b'b'chinos ha'emes. The Rambam himself agrees that ein ro'i shenaniach b'toras ha'elokim emunos b'madregos ha'sharoshim v'ha'scholos she'yichuyav kol bal das lekablom v'emunos ha'cheros yuch she'yuchal l'sapek bohem. That means to say, the Rambam is saying, you can't put any part of the Torah on a pedestal above any other part of the Torah. The Rambam just told us that pasuk in Noach, talking about the generations of Cham, is equally as significant to us as the first of the Aseret HaDibros. So you can't tell me, therefore, that there's actually tiered systems within the Torah of things you should believe more and things you should believe less. It doesn't work like that. He says, Ki kulam yechuyav shekabel v'yamina yosam emes eloki, v'lo yisapek v'lo ya'arer al shum dovar mehem. Because you know what the problem is? Is when you say to us, you know, let's give a random number. These six are the ultimate. These six are the most important. What are you saying? You're saying is, the other 607, right, that are really essentially, it's all right. You know, you could really, you know, give them second thoughts. That's what you're saying. So the Rabbi Abarbanel said, but the Rambam himself laid out that you can't ever create such a doubt. Look at that pasuk in Parshas Noach. If it's true about the belief, same to in mitzvahs. You can't tell me that certain mitzvahs are more important than other ones. You see very important mitzvahs, example, Zichron Yom HaMamad HaNivchar, right? Remembering the day of Mamad Har Sinai, right? Zichron Yetzias Mitzrayim, we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim all the time, right? That's a very important mitzvah. And doing, this is a very important mitzvah, is doing the right and the good, which is an inclusive mitzvah. After the Recha Kamoicha, loving your friend as your neighbor, which has got many, many applications. But they aren't included in the Ikarim. How can you choose one mitzvah over another, which is more important? We know the Mishnah of us says, don't start playing games and don't start saying, I'm going to hedge, I'm going to do a lot of this in order to be able to get a good, you know, this is a good stock to take. Because you don't know, you just simply don't know what's going up and down in the spiritual world. How can you tell me therefore what are the roots and what are the branches of the tree? So he says, if this is true, then what's he done? He's essentially thrown the Rambam out the window. Right? Because the Rambam has now given us 13 principles. So essentially he's saying, well, you can't have 13 principles because that means to say there are another 600 which are not really on the same level. So what's the Rambam doing then? Well, he spent his whole time defending the Rambam.
He says Torah min Shemaim. Once he says Torah min Shemaim, so he says that they're all legal. He doesn't have to...
Right, but then the Rambam shouldn't have 13 principles. So all the Rambam should have said is Torah min Shemaim and everything else should be justified.
Well, he's trying to simplify it. For one person.
Okay. Good. We need to understand what the Rambam is trying to do, but we need to appreciate stage one. The Rambam's argument, stage one, is that everything is an Ikar Emunah. Every single part of Torah is an Ikar Emunah to believe in because you can't really doubt anything else which is on a tier two. Therefore, what's the Rambam doing? So, as you're addressing Dr. Hardingman, and this is what he says, he now tries to defend the Rambam. I'm going to tell you what I think he's trying to do. The Rambam was not saying, telling us what are the principles of the Torah. You'll notice that none of the principles of the Torah are actually mitzvahs. So he's not actually putting on a pedestal one mitzvah above the other.
Incorporates bechira, so if you they all can't be ikar every single mitzvah, or else, otherwise everything would have to be. You have to take it all on faith,
right.
Every single one of them. So Rambam, that's why he has 13, and he has bechira. That means you can obviously do everything else, but beyond it.
So they're prerequisites essentially for the rest of them. So let's come back to that in just a moment. I want to see how if we can fit this into the words of Barbanel himself. Now Barbanel is trying to address this issue. Is at the end of the day. So how are you putting something on a pedestal? So his answer number one is that in fact the principles of faith are not mitzvahs. So you're not putting one mitzvah above the other. This is a gam inyan emunos lo also some ikarim lahagid she emunos la elu muzilosam heime ikarim nischayev lahaminam. Aval it's not only saying that these you have to believe. Aval shehois la kavanos lahayashir la hanashim asher loy heimiku batora. He says, look, there's many people we know. You meet many Jews, and there are many very simple people out there. Right, there are many people who don't have, you know, they're not going to be philosophers and they're not going to be professors at universities. They're regular amcha, regular holy Jews. Right, he says, and they didn't have necessarily the same educational opportunities. He says, but therefore the Rambam is, he says, I'm going to set up a system for those people who can't necessarily come to principles themselves through learning everything. I'm going to give you the basics of Judaism. Does this mean to say that there's something more important than others? No, it means to say that these are more encompassing, perhaps, that was what you were saying, Baruch, that they're more, these are the introduction to Judaism. That every person can have access to Torah or completion. Even people who are not educated, by receiving the ezemunos. So therefore, when the Rambam says the 13 principles, listen to this last line. They are really 13 according to the Talmud HaShomea as an educational tool, not as really an objective reality. So when the Rambam says that there are 13 principles, he's not saying that these 13 principles are the absolute. He's telling you, I want to educate people, and therefore if you need to educate, you need these prerequisites to really believe the rest of the system. So what it's almost like you can sort of hear the balloon fizzling now, right? The Barbanel's put a pin in it. What the Barbanel's saying is that the Yudgal and the Karim of the Rambam isn't as significant as we probably perhaps thought about it, because everything is significant, but this is perhaps the access, the easiest way to access, or the easiest prerequisites to the whole system itself. I see that we've got a little bit over time. What we didn't get to today, and we're going to spend maybe a little bit of time next week on, is in fact the modern day resuscitation of this argument. And that is actually in the last 25 years, there's been a very heated debate over the principles of the Rambam. In article after article, there's been rejoinders after rejoinders after rejoinders, and it's got very, very heated. And what we're going to do is we're going to spend a little bit of time just following, tracing that argument that has appeared recently. And with that, we'll be able to actually now dive straight in to the Ikarim themselves. Because a lot of the arguments which are made, we're going to see are actually very specific. So what we've been doing now is very general. We have time now to actually go into the specifics and see how they apply to each of the specific Ikarim. Thank you very much for making it on the hardest day to have this. We're not going to be doing this on Tisha B'Av.